At the age of 14, you were given a
I was
job.
16,
Or
almost
16.
17,
And what
yeah.
was the first job you were given?
I was in the what's known as the milk plant.
Doing what?
We'd be making what I was telling you about the chocolate chrome that was exported to
Right. And then what did you graduate to?
into the I went in then to the where they'd refine and conch the chocolate into liquid form, and then it'd be sent to different parts of the factory to make sweets, to make bars, you know. And that's where I was talking about Sally, as I knew her. She was in the laboratory. This would be Redmond's daughter, Redmond Gallagher's daughter. Old Harry, he'd be her grandfather. And as I said, she was the most pleasant girl. Where we'd go in like with the viscosity to get a reading on the chocolate, and Sally would do most of that work at the time.
And was it like a conveyor belt where
The
it
refined, oh
was?
yeah, and you'd, yeah, she was amazement with my, particularly the three oldest. When I brought them up, I used to go in on a Sunday morning, and I'd eat the chocolate and that and check things. They couldn't believe you'd maybe have 500 to 600 tons of liquid chocolate, and it'd be conching, you know. Back and forward. It takes so long to cook and to prepare, like to carry on through other parts of the factory. Like,
I'm
was no.
just imagining the smell, gorgeous.
Sure, that's. And the wonder in their eyes, they. Rowntree done the smartest. We had the same type of a sweet. I'm just trying to think the name of it. But when they seen this. Tons and tons of those little, they couldn't believe it.
No, back in the 1950s when you were there first,
Yeah.
or even 40s, late 40s, wasn't it?
No,
Actually, no, 50s,
I
yeah.
went in.
All right, but sweets would have been very, it wouldn't have been, but people would generally didn't eat
Oh, there
sweets.
was a luxury if
Yeah.
you know,
And where were
and
they going?
they went all
Expo
over.
exported them,
Yeah,
mostly.
no, but they were. They were great people when you think of it. There wouldn't be a small shop in Ireland that only wouldn't have delivered to. And they're travellers. They'd be known as travellers. They became merchandisers then when the big stores came in, you know. They'd pack and display on the likes of Super Quinn below us, or H. Williams, or any of the supermarkets. But, the earlier thing was the travellers would go down. It could be the wildest part of Donegal, little shop.
Yeah,
They,
before the age of
yeah, they
supermarket.
would, they would, they would go out maybe once a month, and they get the order. The order would come back in, and we had four vans, transport. Now I'm talking about delivering, and that grew to about 16, 18 vans. And that wasn't a part of Ireland, and they even got into the north to cover shops, small shops.
Now, what was the popular sweet?
I suppose they done the most popular. They had a lovely bar, 2 and 2, it was called. It was a double layer, and it was chocolate finish, bottom and top, you know, and in between you had this. Soft, you would say a sort of a spongy type, and it was a very nice. It was
Caramel, was it?
caramel, yeah. It was a very nice chocolate. It was very popular. That would be one, and then our box of sweets, like our Tara box, the lovely, you know, you'd have maybe 20 different type of centres, you know, finished with the chocolate. Be something like, yeah, you get them today, I suppose.
Yeah, just like any of the
Yeah,
Cadburys
are they?
type.
Yeah, they were
But
up with all that. They were
yeah.
very early.
Yeah, but were they the forerunners to a lot of the design of chocolate?
No, I'd say Carberry's, when they would have been certainly the early Carmeries were in, and they had a place down in York County, Rathmore. They had a huge plant down there. They made the chocolate crumb. But, and we'd certainly be one of the early ones. Yeah. It was, they didn't have much bother selling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They were, they had about 5 travellers, maybe 7 travellers. And that grew to about, maybe 28, 30.
Imagine, yeah.
And then when the merchandisers came in, you'd be talking about total maybe it's 50. They'd be doing the bigger stores, you know, and display units. And it was a big thing, Patrick's Day, the parade. They used to, in a big way, that'd be big work for the transport end and big work for the display that they'd be putting on show, you know, on the parade. That was a big thing.
Yeah.
And also, anything like that, they'd certainly, as I said, they sponsored quite a bit as well.
Let me take you to the stage, so where you're in there, you're working away, and I'm sure never bored, were you?
Never, the work? Because we'd...
What was the communication between you?
We had a soccer team, we had a Gaelic team, played inter-factory, you know. Anything that was on, they had a variety group within, travelled to most parts where shows be on, like, and we had social events were great within the work.
Was there a social club?
That's the sad part. Towards the end, I was on the last social committee, and we were now at this stage, we're being sold. We've been made redundant, and we're looking for a little compensation for our loss of our social amenities. And not alone, he was a Waterford man. He became head of Kane. Jerry Kane was his name. He was the head man. Now at this stage, I'm on to 1981. And he gave us the option to buy the whole lot for 100,000. Now, it meant if it was 20 of us, had to have the good bit of thing to say, all right, 5 grand each. We would have had a wonderful site. We'd have had a very valuable site. And it happened anyway that it was talked about, and unfortunately, it was one lad stronger than more of us, and he talked us out of it. And it was one of the regrets I had, because it had been a great... Now, I mean, we're gone like in numbers now, but it would have been something for the area.
Yeah.
It would have been a great amenity.
Great investment as well, yeah.
Great investment.
But it probably it wasn't to be.
The only way you could look at it after, you know.
But take me back again to the time when you had the social club. Did you have a variety show?
Some great talent.
Yeah.
Went to Drogheda, maybe down to Waterford. Different places. I'm just trying to think quickly. Down to Kildare. We'd travel, like, you know, and it was some very good talent.
Tell me who was on that panel of entertainers.
Oh, you had Christy Healy, who's still alive. He's in Melrose Park now in Tala, but I believe not too well at present. But he was great. So, and some of his sons, young Michael, he was a lovely ballad singer. And you had plenty. You had girls, some great girls, you know. And no bother, they'd come together. We had our Christmas party, workers' party, and as I said, Tommy Hayden was a great man that way. He encouraged a terrible lot of that.
What kind of, do you remember the plays? Have you any recollection of what plays you
played? They don't, that's, a lot of my gun now. They done East Lynn, Paddy Murphy and Mick Yow. It was more of the variety thing was more, it came after, you know, because you had the younger crowd and the sing-song or, you know, the bit of old, that became very much a part.
Yeah. Oh, and it didn't happen until so
the latter years.
The yeah. older fellas didn't get involved. Yourselves, you wouldn't have been, or you probably were.
We were sort of. It's the older again that didn't, you know. But then again, they did anything that was going. It was great. Out in Sandy Shannon, though, that was a big day, you know. They go down to Shannon or different places,
and
and that would be that would be looked forward to. They also used to organize trips to Aintree for the Grand National, and those were all big social events within the job, you know, and great old time, marvelous time. Shillings weren't great at the time, but yeah, it didn't seem to want too much. And everything was, it was a different time. But as regards of employment, it was a very, I'd say, honestly, most people would say, yeah, they enjoyed their time working in Orney.
Yeah. And comparing it with today now, were you just a number, or were you actually, did you know the people?
Actually, there's very few you wouldn't know. You know, the office staff took a while to sort of, because they were away from the factory proper in the early, but then it got closer. You got to know all them. They became, when we got the social club going, they all became very much a part of Orney Chaplains then. They'd come down to the social club and they'd represent the different sections of the where they worked. You'd enter teams within the factory in competitions, you know, and it was a great old time.
What did it do for the area?
I'd say in the early years it meant everything to the area. The talent I knew as a boy was, you had a butcher shop in the middle of the village who moved up to the end of the village in time. You had a harness maker and you had a forge. You had a mix shop, hardware, the whole lot. And then you had the row cottages beside the old police, which is now a funeral home. The old police barracks beside Melrose Church. And you had about 3 or 4 lights in the village. You go across to the top of the village, go left, and you 2 or 3 lights in what we call Melrose at the time, and go across to what is now the old mill at Kendy's of Old Vaughan, it was known as then. They were all green fields, just wide open country. And as I said, what I'd done for the area, it was everything. The 3 factories, but the big one was Orney's. As I'm not too sure, I think, I know it was over 900 to 1. Mm-hmm. It could be as high as near enough to 1100. Because what happened, they brought in the evening shifts, part-time shifts. And a big order would come in and they'd maybe take on 200 women and men. Mm-hmm. And they'd work through the night, 24 hour. The buyers would go on to do the women's work at night time. They were that busy, you know. And address, it was just flying. They had a little, very popular, hard bile little bar, and they sold thousands and thousands of those. As I said, most of it, it's just...
What did you call that bar?
What was it? That's when It was about 12, 13, maybe 14 little hard boiled, different flavours.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name now. Isn't it terrible?
Yeah, yeah.
And I can see the sacks of,
yeah,
and the boxes, you know. The wrapping room, it was all done in this very, very modern machines, you know.
Yeah.
Because it was a very...
And just, you know, kind of the, I'm imagining now, okay, that you're,
yeah,
out in the country. Tally was very much in the country in those days.
Much, yeah, yeah.
So going there, now you said you were, at one stage you were here in the 1960s, but in the 50s you were down in...
Bonabrina.
Yeah. No, it's a fair old distance.
Oh, it was.
How did you get to work?
You'd often walk and you cycle, like, mostly, you know.
What time did you have to be in for?
Depending. When in my early time in it, we done three shifts, 8 till 4, 4 to 12 midnight, and 12 to 8 in the morning. That's when I was on the chocolate, or on the milk plant. Now, they also had 24-hour shifts in parts of the factory,
yeah,
when they got busy.
As
a matter of fact, where I finished, we had we'd start at 7 in the morning, and the second shift to come on at 4 and work to maybe 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
That was the chocolate end of it, you know. And then they had what they called the moulding room, where they moulded all those bars. That would, parts of the year, that would be a 24-hour effort too, depending on the orders that come in, you know. And that's why you say the variation of numbers, you know. They would sometimes have to let people go. They wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't be. But that got less and less. It got very steady. The last 20 year of it, it was very steady employment, you know.
And in those decades, the 50s and the 60s, was it just a mass of bikes coming in the
that's
morning?
That's right, yeah. That's right. And
can you describe that to
me? When you see maybe 300 or 400 bikes racked up in a proper bicycle parking space, if you like, and then all of us, we got wealthy, the first of the cars start to come in. And just across from where the factory was, across where a great old fella who came down from Orney, McLouie, he lived, and across from there they opened the car park, the first car park. It is now where Jacob's Biscuit Factory is. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Oh, yeah, that's the industrial estate
there,
yeah.
And that was all Orney ground.
Imagine.
He owned it all.
But you remember the mass amount of bikes.
And the start of the cars coming in.
Yeah.
The well-off lads getting their first car.
Were they getting any kind of slagging? You know, can your man has a car?
He's grown up in the world. He's made it. He's made it. And the same thing with that. That was another thing. There was a terrible lot of men and women became husbands and wives.
It was a kind of a marriage bureau.
It was a lot of that. It's unbelievable the amount that married, who met working there, and then became husband and wife.
You didn't meet your wife?
No, I did. But funny enough, it was true going to a staff dance in Cleary's.
Hmm.
That's when I first met Ida.
Yeah.
We had our staff dance once a year. And that was a big occasion, the dicky bow and the dress suit. And the ladies got a box of tiara chocolate.
Oh, what else?
Yeah, and that was a big thing from the company. That was given to the...
So what's Ina's maiden name?
Ida.
Ida, your wife.
Nangle.
Nangle.
Yeah.
From Holt. From Holt, yeah.
Yeah.
So inside in Cleary's, that's where you...
Yeah, you'd maybe have 600 people.
Yeah.
At the staff dance.
Yeah.
You know, it was a great occasion.
All right, and so that's Cleary's now in O'Connell Street,
that's
isn't it?
right,
Yeah,
yeah.
and so that's where Ita was
that's
working.
The, that's
Isn't it?
where I no I Ida was working in Holt, but it was through her mother being in hospital with my sister Nuala, who worked in Orneys. They were in the old Vincent's on the Green in hospital together, and it was through that that we met.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And that's the staff dance was coming up, and the thing to do was to ask a lady
to join you.
Yeah, yeah. And that's
the rest is history.
The rest is history, yeah. It's four lads and three girls of a family here now. But none of them are here now. They're all gone. They're all gone their own way.
Yeah, they've all left the nest.
Yeah, left the nest, yeah.
And did any of them
work in Orney?
Work in Orney?
No, no, no.
It was gone in 1981.
81, yeah.
But talk to me about the... who were the suppliers? Who were the people who actually supplied the milk, supplied the ingredients for the chocolate?
Different places down through the country. You know, the HB milk would supply a lot to us, but then there was different creameries down to the, through the country would bring the milk up for processing, for it to be made into. And Irish Sugar Company, it was huge, the amount of sugar. And as far as I know, there was a grant for that at the time, if you were exporting. Something to say now, maybe 300 ton. They used to be in a bag, you know. They were a great bag. It was hard type of
Hessian type of thing.
Exactly. I think of that old mill below on Kerry, you know, down in near your in your street. They'd done the dog food and all that. They had that type of stuff. What was the in Tralee I'm talking about? They had a big mill down there way back, hadn't they?
Oh, yeah, the place was full of mills.
Yeah.
And, but water was something that was extremely important in the making of chocolate as the reason why...
We had a cooling system. It had come out of, particularly the milk plant, the circulation, like the, it had come across the road and... this cooling plant would go up in the air and come back and go back in and circulate again. But you wouldn't use too much water in the making of chocolate.
Oh no, but in the cooling.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And that crystal clear water, where was it coming from?
They had plenty of supply because you'd just up above, about a mile and a half up from the factory, you had the council place there, still there, up behind the bell garden.
The reservoir.
Yes, there, yes, yeah. It's still there, as far as I know. And we had use of that. And then the two or three wells within the within the factory, you know. And the sorrowful thing of all is that Melroon's house was pulled down. That was something to see. That's where old Harry lived for a number of years. And then he came down to right beside the factory, a lovely place, at ground level, I suppose that was the idea of it, you know, because himself and the wife were getting on, you know, and they had a girl that worked in the box room who became their, she would be the housewoman then, Barry was her name, and as I was telling you about Ski, as we call him, Paddy Corrigan, old Harry had a great time for him because there was nothing Ski couldn't do. He was a great handy man. And when the milk plant would be slack, old Harry had agreed to take up maybe 12 or 14 of the lads to keep them going, working. And he'd say to Paddy, they're now so-and-so good, but the triers, you'll learn them. And Paddy used to get a great kick out of that. Oh, he learned them all right. He got on great with them. But he was a great, him, the way he found himself for great that way, Mixon. But I could say the same about Redmond.
Why?
He was a door type of now. He wouldn't be the best now to. He wasn't a man like that. He appealed too much to any of the staff. Like,
they didn't warm to him.
No, no way. But Tommy Hayden was different. They had great time for Tommy Hayden, and any of Tommy Hayden's people that he brought in, they were all brilliant men.
Mm. Did they go through an apprenticeship? Did you go through an apprenticeship?
In the sense that, yeah. Well, they had apprentice fitters, the apprentice electricians, they had all that type of thing within the engineering end of it. And they had two or three carpenters, old John Farrell. His wife came down from Orney, Lizzie. It was McLuhy. It was McCauley. And what was the other family? There's about four or five different families came down with old Harry and the wife to start, like, as early as 1923.
I know, in those...
Yeah, yeah.
In the beginning of it all.
And, seemingly, they were doing a bit of it above in the north. They were doing jams and that. The wife and Harry. And a lot seemed to say she was the... Because... what did they call him in the north? Not peace commissioner. It's something they don't know with the law. He was with King's Council. Would that be it?
Could be. Yes.
He was one of those.
And just when you were a young lad there, and you were there in the '50s.
Yes.
Did you befriended any of the older staff?
Gosh, they were so wonderful. Old Kick Grave. Craven, she would sort of say she was the first secretary. She was a marvellous woman.
And her name was Kit Craven.
Kit Craven.
Craven. And what was she like now?
She was lovely. She was lovely every way. Great big humour. Up for, you know, do the job. I believe from anyone that worked with her, and I'm talking about some of the younger crowd that came to work and under her, they thought a laugh out Kit.
Was she controlling?
She would. She'd have. She would. The office end of it, she'd have a lot of say. She'd have a lot of say with the travellers. She'd have a lot of say with the when we became modern merchandisers, and she'd have a lot of, with the transport drivers. You know, that'd be delivering to the shop. I think if you had a complaint about orders, it would come back to Kit's office, and she'd...
She was the one to look after.
She was the one to look after.
And who else now? Who were the founder workers in there, the first of them?
Well, you'd, as I said, old Winnie McLuhy, he married a Whitty, a local village from the village.
Mm.
You had Bill McCauley. He was one that came down too. And... you had Miley Quinn, who lived over here, originally from Bonabrina. He'd have been an early... I'm talking about foreman now within the factory. And you had Paddy Murphy. And Sam Hughes, who I believe is still alive. He must be about 101, 102. He was over... That time they'd make all their own boxes. Beautiful work. It was a trade within itself. You know, if you got into the box room, you had to serve your time. And then they got to a stage where they were buying them in May. But the early years, they made
there,
all
there
their
was
own.
An art in that, wasn't all there?
Very
in,
much,
in the making of the boxes,
and
the ribbons.
Yeah, and an art in packing.
Yeah.
You know, finishing the box. That wasn't a job you just pick up in a day.
That was all by hand.
And excuse me, that took a lot of time to learn.
Yeah,
it was a trade within itself.
And so the attention was paid to perfection.
Oh, very much. Quality control was a big thing.
Yeah,
yeah, And hygiene was certainly a big part of it.
And did people take pride in their work?
Oh, very much, yeah. You'd have to go in with your uniform every week. You'd have to, and you, laundered, you know, spick and span. You know, you'd be told very quickly if you weren't up to, you know, that's not suitable.
So the uniform was what colour?
A white with ornie. And that's for the men, though. And the girls, white as well. They had a lovely hat and most. And then again, the box room, they had a brown, you know, to go with the box end of it. Then the quality control, they'd be in blue.
Oh, yes.
They'd have 20 of a staff. And then it went to green. And the ladies, the four women, like, they'd in charge of the different parts, they'd all be in green as well.
Mm. It was almost like military, wasn't it? Yeah, you yeah. were just, it all and depended on the picture, uniform.
Could you picture?
Yeah.
The rosary being said and at dinner hour in the, what we'd call the canteen, this was before we got modern.
Tell me now about and the maybe, rosary. How did that happen? I mean,
it was a few of the old school, you know. And it started, I believe, in the marrying year, 1950.
Oh, 1954, wasn't
50,
it?
50, was it?
Or 19, yeah.
I think it was 50.
And so what exactly happened? Yeah.
And started a small few, at the dinner hour, a few men and women. So then, like, it was no same pasta. If you were in there, had your cup of tea, the men and women would kneel down and say the rosary.
And no thought was taken of it. I mean, you were there.
Be a trickery, maybe.
So how many decades of the rosary? Oh,
the five.
Were they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was... And when we got our own... when we modern... we got the modern canteen then, it sort of stopped that.
Yeah.
Because people were going in at different times and it was... you went along, you know, and you picked up whatever food you were going to eat. Went to the end of the counter and paid for it and went in. Yeah. Things changed a bit then. But it's still very close. Mm. It was unbelievable, the closeness of, you know.
And did that deed bring people closer? I mean, the fact that they got together to say the rosary.
Yeah. I'd say all of that helped in its own way, you know. As I said, Christmas party, that was a big thing. Old Harry or Mrs. Geller, they wouldn't have been. But from the time Tommy Hayden came in and his wife, he liked that. And he was very much in favour of that type of a social life for the workers, and he loved letting the hair down and having the few on the night. And if you are fortunate to be asked back to Melrose House, it could go on to 4 a.m. I had the privilege twice.
Oh, did you?
He was a great man that way.
He just looked after his staff.
And he was a hard man once he'd lose it, but he was a great man like that, as I said. He'd come down. We had an old lady, Mrs. Power. She was in charge of the ladies wanted something, you know, or you got a cuss and that, whatever. She was, one time she was, she'd been in South Africa, and then she was in Vincent's Hospital, but then we got her as our nurse, you know. On one occasion, as I said, the Christmas party was a big thing. And lads would get up and sing the song. And of course, it'd be great, you know. Some lads thought they were better than they were, and some of them very good. But this particular lad, he was singing Mammy. And what he didn't know, he was getting down on the knees. When he get down, his sleeve was open. And this Mrs. Power, oh, get the brute down off the stage. And of course, the lads are roaring and the women. And Mick thought he was doing better than he was doing. He didn't realise what was happening. But, it was that type of thing, you know.
Yeah.
And
tell me, talk to me about your life out here in this neck of the woods now.
Yeah.
You came out here in 1964 then, 1960.
Came here to Walkinstow.
And that's when you got married, or in about
1962.
And why did you come to this place?
I tell you, my father died in 57. And I don't know if I want to say everything, but yeah. What happened was, I might as well say it. He hadn't good health for a while. And he must have, the old thing that time, we did about 37 acres of ground in Bone Arena. And he must have said to the oldest brother, the old way, like the oldest would be.
Would be entitled to the farm, yeah.
But he was going with this girl who he married. And he obviously said it to my mother. Now, at this stage, there was only one of us married. That was the oldest sister. And the second was, she was shortly to be married. And what I'm told by my mother was it troubled her greatly because the place wasn't my father to leave to anyone. The old granda that we call granda, the father was, he was a hard man in his early days with the drink, but it was a condition, an agreement with the mother that he give up the drink, which he did. And he started Pioneer Centre in Bone Arena with my mother and another man by the name of Ned Burden. And it was a big thing for years and years. But
that's very interesting.
Yeah, the mother, and see the old granddad being that he was always thinking, I suppose, would he go back in it? Would she be left with anything, you know, because drink can be a demon altogether. But he never did. But she had to then face up and tell the older brother, well, you know, it wasn't his to leave. The farm is in my name. So she thought best then that she'd sell it and give them. And I was keeping a few pigs and a couple of cattle at the time. Sold off, and I'd 2 year that I wouldn't like to think back on, because I didn't know what I was doing, sort of. But out of it, I came to live here with my mother and the younger brother, and he was only a short while here. And the older brother married Willie from here. He married 61. So we had from 60 to 1974. She'd some very happy years here, you know. When we married, my mother was here with us. She lived to 1974. And she loved the church. So the church is just 5 minutes across, which meant a lot to her, you know.
And you looked after her here.
Well, she was very much her own woman, you know.
But
she taught her best like that way, that, and that's how I came to Walkinstown.
All right, yeah. But I'd say you're in Surrey, because it's a lovely place, lovely house.
Oh, grand. As you said there earlier, life is funny, you know. Yeah. If I had a regret, was that we didn't buy the club that time, given the option.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes.
But that's life, it's gone. And he was a great man, that Cain, who became head of Unilever Europe. And he was telling me his father was a boiler man below in Waterford. And Unilever owned this particular part. So when we were in, I was involved with the old union. And when we were in, he was that type of man you could talk to. And he's telling us, he says, from the time Unilever purchased Orny's, or HP as it was known, because Grace had it previous to Unilever, he says from the time, it was never anything other than to sell. The reason that they purchased was they couldn't get it. That was, and as I said, your man was a very outspoken man, Thierry Kane. He became chief of Unilever Europe then after. But he told us from the time they purchased HP ice cream, and HP, the deal was they couldn't get the ice cream unless they took chocolate. Unit that's known as Orny's previously, or HB chocolate, and he said yous were always for sale. And what I'm saying to you now, Morris, if they'd have put quarter the money into what they paid in redundancies, into modernising, there would have been, because you see all of the places open since, there would have been 200 or 300 jobs still there. There was no thinking went into it.
And what did you do then when you were when you were left redundant?
Finish. Yeah. I done anything and everything.
Did you?
I done cut the timber for a while in the forest, sold it. All the area up around Talla, the new house in Killinern, Rockhampton, where you're going up to meet Peter. Mm. That was all Greenfield area, and then it all developed, and we done the logs up there. Then I do a bit of building, you know, with different lads. Anything I could get, Sheila, now.
I know, yes.
You know, hadn't yeah. much choice.
Yeah.
Some of them were still young.
But looking back over the years, I'm sure that there were very happy years.
We had, yeah. as I said, they still talk about our social yeah. club. People came into it for the first time and they never wanted to leave us. I remember when he was a founding member of Galway United soccer team, and he came up, and myself and poor old Jack Kavanagh, we were working the bar on the Sunday morning, and we didn't think anything of it. We made a couple of sandwiches and he had his pint with two or three other, and the next thing his son-in-law says to me how much he appreciated, and he said when they're coming up again would it be all right. I said no, I bother. So there was two busloads in Galway United for the first 3 or 4 years. They had great support, maybe still have, but he came up and there was a glass on the counter, and we gave it to him. We swear we were after giving him the lotto. You know what I mean?
Really, there was that kind of
lovely
closeness. Yeah,
lovely. Yeah,
Morris Kelly. Listen, thank you for inviting me here. Yeah. It was lovely to come and talk to you.
Yeah, well, more than welcome. Thanks.